Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics.
Start off doing some news here. We've had a big killer whale kill a white rabbit, you know. These white rabbits... out there fooling with killer whales. Killer whale grabs a rabbit and drowns her. Apparently she died of shock and drowning, you know, or a whale, look, killer whale, Shamu's trainer down there at SeaWorld or wherever it was. Who on earth would adopt, would train a killer whale and fool with them and keep them alive in tanks? Well, white rabbits will. You know, white rabbits love other animals. Treat them like little humans, yeah. Yeah, and then of course when they get killed by a killer whale, then they, you know, that's because it was in captivity or because it was, which is probably more true, or because it was, you know, he's a little mentally challenged, he's a little aggressive, you know, but no one states the obvious that maybe it was just a killer whale being a killer whale, but who knows, but you know, the white rabbits gotta adopt these animals and do crazy stuff with them. No one else in the world would be adopting an animal like that or fooling with one if white rabbits didn't show them how or didn't do it first, but that's another story for another day. So when you hear about this killer whale that was a little off kilter or was acting crazy or was a little rambunctious or something like that, just say, well, maybe he was just being a killer whale. Maybe it was just the obvious thing, you know. Let's see what else. You had a plane, a white rabbit in a plane plow into an IRS building. Haven't heard a lot of news about that. That's what's interesting about it. You'd think that the, you know, a white rabbit male plowing into an IRS building, I mean, talking about going for broke, suicide mission. You'd think that make a lot bigger news than it did. I thought that was kind of interesting. Don't know a lot about it other than, obviously he was committed to doing whatever he was going to do and dying in the process, which is interesting. On the international front, the big scene is the Dubai assassination and the identity thefts linked with Israel. They were stealing British passports, and this has caused quite a stir in Europe. And I believe one of the passports was Irish. But Miliband, who was a neocon, and I believe his grandfather was one of the big commie Hebrews, one of the big commie Jew rabbits, you know, Bolshevik, escaped, came from Russia into the UK. You'd have to look him up, David Miliband, M-I-L-I-B-A-N-D. And he was called in the carpet in London. And he was asked to explain why he wasn't putting more pressure on Israel over this. You know, they're jumping up and down. Here they use fake passports to pull over some hit on these Arabs, you know, and you got this big Muslim population going nuts over this, and you got David Miliband, who's Jewish or part Jewish, and they're demanding that he put all kinds of pressure on Israel, and he's running around trying to do that. But that's in London. That's kind of interesting. Most of the time, something like that would be shoved underneath the rug, but not anymore. David Miliband gets called on the carpet. Yeah, he has to put pressure on Israel, and they keep asking him, you know, what are you doing to Israel? Are you copping a plea for your fellow Hebrew? That's what they're asking him. I mean, I'm looking at Times Online, and you can look it up. Miliband, use of British passports for an assassination and outrage. And of course, you know, it does kind of look bad. You think Israel would be a little more, a little more discreet, but no, you know. He was accused of just going through the motion. And in this one article, let's read what this is. This is Times Online. Miliband, use of British passports for assassination and outrage. I'll read this to you. It's kind of funny. Mr. Miliband denied the mild step of inviting Mr. Prosar in for talks was merely going through the motions. And Mr. Prosar, who is Prosar? Let's see who he is. He's an Israeli ambassador. In other words, they invite the Israeli ambassador over for tea. Meanwhile, the Israeli, the Mossad using British passports and whacking people in Dubai. Anyways, it's just comedy. What's funny is he has to explain himself. That's what's funny about it. You know, he has to give all these explanations. But they're starting to catch heat. I've talked about this in London. I mean, the idea that he'd be questioned or his the fact that he would have be questioned on going soft on a fellow Hebrew and stuff like that is pretty interesting. Although this is pretty blatant, you know. But you can read all about it. It's the big thing in Europe. You know, false identities from the UK and Miliband's on the spot. And, of course, you got the Israeli ambassador and they're, you know, he's talking about, you know, he's been questioned on whether or not he's not putting enough pressure on him because he's a fellow Jew. And basically there's a lot implied. I'm surprised they haven't been screaming anti-Semitism. But like I said before, they're catching more and more heat in a way that anyone can just tell. Let's see here, on to Iran. Iran develops air defense system comparable to Russia's S-300. See, Russia was supposed to sell them S-300s. Well, apparently, now this is military news from IRA Novosti. This would be, this was the one in English. That's IRA, IRA-NOVOSTI. Iran develops air defense system comparable to Russia's S-300. S-300 is a monster to get around. The only thing worse than S-300, S-400, and some of the different American stuff. But apparently, they actually got the blueprints for it, or maybe someone slipped them the blueprints, or maybe someone sold them part of the system before, and then just maybe someone passed on parts so they can put the thing together. Who knows? Who knows? You know, supposedly they got aerial drones with strike capabilities, and Israel on that front, Israel has unveiled all kinds of new drones and all kinds of new drone armies as well. All kinds of crazy stuff going on there as we march toward war, but no one really knows what Iran has, and now they're talking about, you know, many experts believe Moscow's refused so far to honor the S-300 contract due to pressure from Washington and Tel Aviv. Well, they might not have to if they got an S-300 via other ways, if they built one. Who knows? Who knows what they've done? Let's see here. Iran says, this is Reuters, India, actually. Iran says to unveil air defense system equal to Russia's system. In other words, they're saying we have an S-300 by our own ways. I don't know what all this means. We won't know until it goes off. Is an S-300 hard to penetrate? Yeah, an S-300 is terrifying to penetrate. An S-400 is, even for stealth aircraft, they can bring it down. An S-300 can bring down certain types of stealth, too. No one really knows until you fully start testing one of these things. Let's see what Iran's doing to provoke more. Iran to hide nuclear plants inside mountains, according to Tehran. Yeah. Atomic chief, Ali Akbar Salahi. Yeah, we're going to hide him inside mountains. He doesn't sound too afraid of the UN. Yeah, he's trying to tick off some Jew rabbits, I guess. They seem to do that about every other day, though. Yeah, talking about hiding nuclear plants inside mountains, and they have nothing but mountains there on one side, is pretty comedy. Iran leader orders new step in nuclear program. You know, and you got Ahmadinejad wearing the white goggles. Comedy stuff. I don't know what to say about it other than the marches to war. And of course, Israel is accused of waging covert war across the Middle East. All over Damascus, all over the place. They're talking about this war ramping up if it hasn't already started. What's interesting is they went to Moscow. Some Israeli leaders, I don't know exactly who, went to Moscow. And prior to them getting to Moscow, there was an anti-Semitic leader, which supposedly was allegedly signed by a group of 500 Orthodox Christian patriotic people. 20 included members of the Duma. Well, it came out that it was a fraud. And so a lot of people are thinking someone put this thing out to try to pressure Poodie-Poo to say, to crack down on Iran or something. You know what I mean? Something weird like that. Oh, you're just not doing it because you're anti-Semitic, something like that. But it's a pretty weird story, and it came out through the Jewish Federations of North America. Jewish news becomes Russian news through anti-Semitic letter. Interesting story. It happened right in front of this big meeting, and of course it came out it was a fraud, and Putin basically said, oh, no. There's no anti-Semitism here. You know, and there's all these quotes from Hebrews. I'm afraid to think of every third individual in my country as an anti-Semite. This is in Russia. And, of course, you know, the Russian officials said, well, it's all scam. And it's saying it put President Putin in an awkward position. I think that's what it was supposed to do. You know, talking about, oh, there's all this anti-Semitism in Russia, and you got to help out the Jewish country, Israel, probably. They were trying to put pressure on them over Iran, probably. Common sense would dictate, since that was on the agenda. And, of course, we got Ann Applebaum, the neocon, op-ed columnist for the Washington Post. Prepare for war with Iran in case of an Israeli strike. Prepare for war with Iran in case Israel strikes. By Ann Applebaum, Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010. Well, that's nice. That's real nice. You want to talk about opening up Pandora's box, and they will do it too. Watch. Contrary to Palin, I do not think Obama would restore the fortunes of his presidency by bombing Iran. They don't think he's going to walk in and help them with Iran. I don't know. I don't know what all is going on there. You know, on the conspiracy channels are talking about some assassination of Obama, all this crazy neocon talk, how much they hate Obama, and I can only imagine. He's not their boy, really. Although he's surrounded by all kinds of crazy stuff, this should be rather interesting, but I hope not. He's the greatest president for white rabbits ever. He's pro-white genocide, and he's honest with it. John McCain would have been pro-white genocide, and he'd lie about it. You know what I'm saying. Same old, same old. So Obama's waking up more, has done more for white rabbits than any president in the history of, in a long, long time. I mean, he hasn't done anything to help him, but, you know, he's pro-white genocide, and he's very honest about it. There's no danger of that. You know, they'll sit there, and once you affirm it visually, they start going a little bit nutty. You know, once they see that, the mulatto prince, and once they hear all this stuff coming down, then they get upset. But, so he's done his job in that effect. In fact, if you could hit a button and put, mulattoes in the Senate, which would be about 100 of them, I'm sure you could find 100. You put them all over the Congress, which, 400 something of them. I don't even know how many congressmen there are these days and the exact number. They're always changing around things with districts and whatnot. What kind of good citizen am I? And put about, you know, 50 as governor, we'd get somewhere really quick. You know, all those mulattoes in there, this place would change overnight. Yeah, so I don't want to see anything about Obama getting assassinated. It's just getting interesting. Leave him in there for a little while longer. He ain't got no power to do anything. The place is bankrupt. America does have the largest economy in the history of the world. It just has the largest debt in the history of the world. And everything's coming undone globally. Yeah, this stuff is global. In the next segment, I'm going to go into... So to wrap it up, the march toward war continues. It's not if, but when. They're talking about any time. Ann Applebaum, prepare for war with Iran in case Israel strikes. And they may very well open it up. Iran doesn't look too afraid. I would be no matter where I was sitting in the Middle East, because there's some unknown factors. There's some unknown factors here. A whole lot of them. And this will be the one you tell your grandchildren's children about when this thing happens and what happens right afterwards and all that kind of stuff. This should be pretty wild. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't happen by Easter. I just can't believe they're going to let it go that long, because there's too much fear. And let's face it, the Iranians are stroking things. Yeah, we're going to put nuclear power plants in mountains, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And, you know, you can't do anything about it. You're weak. Yeah, he's kind of crazy. But in the next segment, I'm going to go into, so it's not if, but when on war. And same old, same old. When it happens, everyone will know it. It could literally be any day they're going to open this thing up. They're certainly getting ready across the board. I mean, anyone with half a brain on this planet sees it. It's pretty hard to ignore right now. And then we'll see. In the next piece, I'm going to go over a propaganda exercise. A simple exercise to do when you're watching any type of movie, film, reading any type of a news report, so on and so forth. And that'll be in the next piece. Start by doing a propaganda exercise. Something I promised to throw in one of these. It's a simple thing that I always do when watching anything, even science fiction or even reading a fictional book about random topics, or when reading a news report, or when watching a movie, so on and so forth. I always ask three questions, and they are questions of that should be asked of any particular media or propaganda or anything basically you want to get to the bottom of. And they're questions that generally make you think, but they're very simple. The first is, who benefits from this? Who benefits from this? And it could be you come to a financial conclusion in some cases, or otherwise. Sometimes it's simple and sometimes it's not so simple. Sometimes it takes a little more thinking. The second question is, why is this information being produced? What is the objective, or why is it being produced? And actually, this is talked about on Bugs or Bob's Underground Graduate Seminars. Always ask why something is being produced, why something's being done, or why something's being written, or why a movie's being produced. And the third element is, does it achieve its objective, its stated objective, you know, on the actual reason it's being produced, or does it achieve another objective? Sometimes when you're dealing with white rabbits, we don't really view the world like most other rabbits. So you got to be careful in what type of media you put them in front of. But it's a simple exercise and deadly effective at getting you aware. And most human beings on this planet are becoming very aware. In the past 30 years, have become very aware of them a lot, to a whole lot. They don't really trust the media. So whenever you watch something, you're kind of on a subconscious level probably asking, you know, what's behind all this? What game are they going to? Why are they lying to me about this? You know, so on and so forth. But I'm going to, in this particular exercise, I'm going to talk about something I saw. And, you know, sometimes this stuff comes out and you think you know what it's about, but you don't. And it's a film called Defamation. It was on David Duke's website, davidduke.com. And it was an article by Gilad Atzmon, Giladatzmon, and the film is called Defamation, astonishing new film on anti-Semitism. And I watched the whole thing, and you can't play it on there anymore, the link doesn't work, but you can look it up and get it online. It's a film, Defamation is a film by Yoav, Y-O-A-V, Shamir, S-H-A-M-I-R. And he talks about, you know, he has interviews. He basically is a young Israeli, and he's interested in anti-Semitism and this word Nazi and all this stuff, and why they're always talking about this stuff in Israel. And he seems like a normal Israeli looking actually for the truth behind these different Jewish organizations. And he finds it. And I don't think he likes what he finds, but he seems like a legitimate truth seeker. So when you start, who benefits from this? Well, anyone looking for the truth behind these things would benefit from this. You know, does it achieve the objective? Yeah. You know, it's pretty interesting. And one of these parts, some of the most interesting things that jump into my mind, is the professor that wrote this thing called The Holocaust Industry. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Let me look it up. Norman Finkelstein. And he is pretty critical of the Jews on a lot of different levels, you know, but he's not racial, and he's not a national socialist. He's not interested in white nationalism or anything like that, but Norman Finkelstein. And this young Israeli is interviewing him toward the end, And Norm Finkelstein does a Sieg Heil. And he says that Abe Foxman is worse than Hitler. Because Hitler never did it for the money. I thought that was pretty profound. That's something that sticks out in my head. Another thing that sticks out in my head is how deeply disturbing a lot of this programming is. What he does is he goes on this field trip, and I want to say it was like to Poland. Poland, Auschwitz. And you have these young Israelis and or young Hebrews from all over the world, young Jew rabbits, and these young Jew rabbits are being indoctrinated in the Holocaust stuff, right? And as they get on this bus, the guy at the head of the bus says, you know, this bus could be blown up at any time. We're hated by everyone. It is pretty wild to see this, and these kids are some of them act like pretty wild Jew rabbits. You know, they're running around the hotel they're staying in, and the most memorable part of the movie is when he observes these young Jew rabbit girls, and they're going over and they're picking a fight with old Polish Gentiles, and they basically just picked a fight with them, and they're trying to start arguing. These are real old Polish Gentiles near Auschwitz. And out of nowhere, they start saying stuff to him, and then they comes back and he's like, what was that all about? Now, meanwhile, he caught it all on tape, and they're trying to argue with him and everything else. He's like, well, they called us donkeys and pigs and everything else. They're Nazis, you know, they're anti-Semites, something like that line. He said, well, they didn't say that at all. You picked a fight with them. And then they just got off the subject. You know, it's like they're lying right in front of the camera, and they realize they're lying right in front of the camera, and they don't even really care. It was pretty disturbing. I don't know if it's a well-chosen example, if he just went on the right trip to the right place, or, you know, when you look at the type of programming going on, we got to get them before they get us, and everyone's a not. It is pretty disturbing stuff, because you have some young people obviously in some heavy duty programming, and the challenge is that, you know, when it comes to programming, you can't light a candle without a wick, so there has to be something in there, and these kids are gone mentally. Certain elements of them are gone. You'd have to see it. And, of course, a certain percentage of them become Foxy Foxman. And Abe Foxy Foxman was nothing I didn't already imagine. You know, he's trying to extort the Ukraine. I mean, you just have to watch it. It is a brutally honest portrayal by an Israeli trying to get the bottom of where all this stuff is going. Why are they having all these problems? And it is very, very honest. In my opinion, it's an hour long, but I put off watching it, and when I watched it, I was glad I did. I was pretty shocked. They're farther gone than I thought. At a very young level, certain elements of the Jew rabbits are just gone. They're heavily, but that is the problem. You know, you start cooking up these groups, in Europe. I've already said what they are and what they aren't. Certain elements of them will go back a long ways, just like certain elements of the white rabbits listening to me now. But when it comes to Judaism as a religion, you know, in Europe, you could be, all through the Middle Ages and whatnot, you could be a Protestant or Catholic, but only one of them in any given country. But you could always be a Jew. And they have a lot of converts. And if you wanted to be, if you couldn't be a Protestant, and didn't want to be a Catholic, you'd probably make a good Jew. And you got a lot of Kafka elements, and there are a lot of inbreeding there and a lot of other things going on. And they do have bloodlines coming from the Middle East and whatever. And I don't know that anyone get the bottom of that group, but when it comes to the, this group has been put together over several hundreds of years to the extent that they are gone. The little anti-rabbit, the little kid in the back of the class that doesn't want to go along with the class, that is, you know, now he's his God's chosen rabbit. This group has, they've let things go way, way too far. In my opinion, they would have given these Jew rabbits, their elites would have given them up years ago, if another side would have taken them. The problem is that they're an albatross. You can't do anything with them. They are gone. And now when it comes in the Middle East, I mean, you know, we gotta get them before they get us. We got Gollum heading to the fire after that ring. You know, we've talked about this. They're ready to dance in that ring with that, dance in the fire with the ring of power. They're gone. But it's an interesting look at them, and it's an interesting look, an example of you can use that particular tactic. And I do this on a subconscious level to the extent that I probably should have talked to you about it a long time ago when I first came out there, because that's kind of a critical tool. Many of you are doing elements of it on a subconscious level because you don't believe most of the stuff you're reading. You know, who benefits from this? Why is this being produced? Sometimes you have a group benefit from it that isn't necessarily intended to. You know, I can't think of many examples off the top of my head, but I will come back to this. You know, who benefits from this? Why is this information being produced? Does it achieve its objective, or does it achieve another objective? In the next question and answer, I'm going to be talking to the fantasy conspiracy white rabbits, because I'm having some conversations with some of them. It's pretty interesting. They're asking questions about, you know, all kinds of interesting stuff. But that's on the next question and answer. But I'm going to go through this on some different things. When you start dealing with the massive amount of propaganda out of World War II, you go through the exercise when it comes to the propaganda coming out on even stuff that I know to be fantasy, like Hanabu UFO stuff and Arctic Reich survival myths and stuff like that. You see, the challenge with it isn't the fact that this stuff just doesn't go away. The challenge is that when you try tracing it back and when you ask the basic questions of propaganda, well, it doesn't matter if it's not true. Who benefits from this? Why is this information being produced? Does it achieve its objective, or does it achieve another objective? You know, you got to go through this with anything. Certain different themes coming out of Hollywood. You know, obviously we know a lot about the multiracial, multicultural propaganda, and you know, you can go through the exercise with that too. Why is this being produced? Who benefits from this? Wow, Jew rabbits are definitely kicking it out, and it's being produced so they can create a blended humanity. You know, does it achieve that objective? No, not really. Because only some are going to blend it. It ticks them off. You know, it ticks off every group, believe it or not. There's a great percentage of every group that has no interest in being multiracial, but this is the road to really getting the bottom line on what you're looking at. The challenge comes in is when you get a lot of cross currents, like you have some young Israeli Yoav Shamir, and he goes in and produces a film, Defamation, trying to get to the bottom line on anti-Semitism and why he's heard all these words but doesn't really understand it. And he goes on a field trip looking for an honest solution. He's not doing anything to make anyone look good. He just wants the truth behind some issues. And there are some Israelis that I'm sure are good people, probably more normal than the Jewish diaspora. But and he goes looking for this. So what he sets out to do is to find the truth. And the objective it achieves is that he exposes the group as being completely nuts. And it pretty much solidifies anyone that thinks that they're gone mentally. I mean, he makes Abe Foxman look like an absolute scam, which most people know he is. But I mean, even the average person watching this, they're not going to say this is some David Duke with some axe to grind. I mean, they're gone. But that's a good exercise, and it's a short exercise, and there's nothing complicated about this, but who benefits from this? Why is this information being produced? And does it achieve its objective, or does it achieve another objective? Sometimes it's easy to work through, sometimes it's not so simple. But all in all, there are questions that I ask myself every time I'm seeing anything, even a sci-fi movie out of Hollywood. Because you got a lot of messages in this type of society that are communicated through not so obvious ways. Not everything is what you see is what you get. Although sometimes it can be. And we'll get back to this exercise, but that's a simple exercise on how to read anything in front of you. But you should always ask why something's being produced and who benefits from this. Always, 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 always. Because it's very seldom white rabbits, but that's that exercise. I want to spend some time talking about the basics and the importance of a consistent message. In the first handful of these, they're geared toward pretty much a radically different audience. They're not just geared toward the traditional white nationalist, paleo-conservative. I'm trying to expand an audience, and I haven't really went into this exactly, but I probably will so in the next one, because I got to answer questions and answers from my expanded audience, and they're a pretty interesting group. In other words, there's a lot of white rabbits out there that are going to be as inclined or more inclined to a consistent message than maybe certain elements of paleo conservatives or white nationalists. So I'm trying to expand that audience by talking about different topics that they are looking at, but yet no one's talking about it from a racial perspective. And that gets some flack. I'm not really responsible for this playing on Stormfront or any of the other venues. But you get people, paleo conservatives and the white nationalists, and white nationalists are by and large paleo conservatives who got mugged by neocons. And steely-eyed lone wolfers are mostly white nationalists who got mugged by paleocons becoming white nationalists. something like that. But, you know, it's one big group, and I'm going to go into this more in my question and answer, but typically I did not gear it to put paleoconservatives on a consistent message or white nationalism, the more conservative variety of white nationalists on a consistent message. Someone had been there doing that for quite a while, and it was working, but not working dramatic enough. So I had to I expanded the audience, and that has nothing to do with anyone but my own analysis. That what someone was doing wasn't working the way it was supposed to. So if you want something different, you got to do something different. There's a lot bigger audience of white rabbits out there than just paleo conservatives than just white nationalists. Now, heavens knows white nationalist media is huge. But it's not as big as, say, if you go to Rense.com, R-E-N-S-E.com, and you look at their numbers. Their numbers are epic. Now, I don't talk about a lot of stuff. Everything I talk about is sourced. If it wasn't for Joseph P. Farrell and his stuff that's sourced, I'd be in a lot of trouble because I am a skeptical rabbit, white rabbit. So I kind of fall into that white nationalist camp, I guess, if you want to put me in a camp. If you go to Infowars.com and look at their numbers, they're huge. If you look at altermedia.info, their numbers in Germany are huge. And that the German altermedia.info is kind of like an Infowars, but for racial, more of a racial, with a racial bent, which is kind of cool. So basically I'm looking to expand that audience. But when you do that, you end up ticking people off. You know, that I became a sustaining member on Stormfront. You know, Follow the White Rabbit is a sustaining member on the Stormfront. I did it so I could read what these guys were saying. You know, there's a lot of white, traditional white nationalists, paleo conservatives that do not like this show. It's not geared for them. A lot of them understand that now. They get that, and they go and read Bob Whitaker stuff. And Bob Whitaker and a lot of the posters on there would be more geared for them. They don't like this at all, in fact. But I'm going to talk to them today about the importance of a consistent message. I can talk to them, but there was no point in me putting out another show, just another show for white nationalism specifically. In other words, preaching to the choir. I'm interested in a lot bigger group, and what that group is looking at is World War II revisionism and a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting topics that can all be talked about from a racial perspective now, because I got a guy in his sources. I got Dr. Farrell and all his sources, for better or worse. So that's fine. If I can go in there and help expand an audience and put them on a consistent message or bring more into that camp, that's A-okay. I know that most white rabbits are not racial thinkers, and that is racial. There's no way around that. But this is for paleo conservatives and a consistent message on white nationalism. If you're looking at any group, and in most groups in America, you're gonna, actually all over Western civilization, you're gonna have your local environmental group. And in America, that one of the big powerful ones that comes around in this neighborhood, and it all over the Midwest, is Clearwater Action. And that type of thing. And they'll come around and they'll have a set of talking points, and most of them will be memorized, and they will have a consistent message. That consistent message will be written by a professional or a series of professionals. Generally, a lot of these environmental groups do not have the fortune to pay a professional that does this for a living, that has proved successful decade after decade. So they get their time donated. In other words, you know, agency XYZ in Washington wants their name out there, that they donated time to help environmental group. It's kind of common sense. And you know, they'll donate their time and they'll write a consistent message. But, you know, they will hand this out, and these guys that go door to door, they're campaigning to get on a ballot maybe for some type of bill for cleaner water. You've seen all this stuff in your area, or elements of it. They will have a consistent message. PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. These are groups, Greenpeace, they will all have consistent message and there will be professionals writing them. You have to have that. You can't have any type of successful political campaign. Any type of practical politics starts with a consistent message. That's one of the basics. That is the most basic thing. If you don't have that, you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. But in watching these environmental groups, one particular group in specific, you always have some people that don't want to go on a consistent message. They want to remake things. And of course, the honest response is, well, did someone hire you to pay you gazillions of dollars to do this? I mean, is this your level of expertise? You know, you want to redo our consistent message. You don't have that particular expertise. This is our consistent message. You're either on it or you're not. And if you're not on it, well, we can't be paying you go to door to door and all that kind of stuff. Some people understand that and they read it off. You know, kind of like you see these guys at the door and they're pretty much on their spiel. They're on their bill of goods and they're selling their vote for this type of environmental bill that's getting ready to pass at your local level, so on and so forth. You'll have another type of Bill Clinton that will make them his own. And he'll be on the consistent message, but in his own unique way. And they don't have a problem with that. But let's face it, not everyone's has those type of political skills, those type of skills in practical politics, of being on the same message 9 ways to Sunday and always coming back to it and that type of thing. You know, a lot of people are happy just reading it. But you will notice this in the area, but that is the basics. You have to have it, and you always have some people that don't want to be on one, or don't understand the importance of one. When it comes with the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, and I think that's one thing that gets on a lot of the white nationalists or paleo conservatives that don't like this particular show, that I'm not talking about race directly. I'm talking about it in regards to animals. I've made us into this little friendly animal. I'm doing that to expand an audience. I'm not doing that to irritate you, but there's plenty of shows out there for you. I figure if they're going to get on a consistent message, they're either going to get on one or they're not. Either they're going to understand or they're not. It has nothing to do with paleo conservatives per se outside of Washington, I don't think, because James Edwards, when he first had Bob Whitaker on his show long, long ago, I noticed that that James Edwards was a young paleo conservative that understood the basics. He understood that he had to be on some kind of consistent message. That's just one of the basics. Dr. David Duke put out one of the best videos he's ever done on genocide. It's on my Twitter link. You'll see it is one of the best videos he's ever done. The only thing he could have done better was do the whole entire mantra at the end. In fact, I'm surprised someone over at Bugs at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar didn't add that on for him, or add that in there. But typically when it comes to this type of thing, we face a unique challenge. One, demoralization. But demoralization is ending. You're 15 years out of under new medium. So demoralization, you're no longer demoralized. People are asking questions. You have to be on a consistent message. There's another challenge. Our message is not specific. You're not writing a consistent message for Clear Water Action in Illinois and the city of Chicago. This is it's not nationwide. It's all over the Western world. That is very unique. And you got to have something with a unique skill set. I use Bob Whitaker's name. A lot of people think I'm a big fan of old Bob Whitaker. Well, I think he's right about a few things, and his type of thinking I think is right on. But I'm going to go into that in a little bit in a few minutes here. But I basically use his name to lend credibility to a message. That's something they weren't doing because he doesn't promote himself. He didn't promote himself. Never really had to in Washington, in my opinion, and these are just my opinions, but a lot of people know who he is, and they come to him for things and whatnot, and he's very good at certain things. What it tells you in using his name, and if he's attaching his name to anything, in other words, if someone says, Oris, you need to add this talking point, and someone on Bugs is signing their name to it, and Bob doesn't say anything to the contrary, I'm going to use it. Anything that has his blessings is going to be tip top. He's not going to put his name behind some message that's not going to get us anywhere, especially in regards to his race. So I used his name because he is a professional, he has a credibility, and he's easy to look up. I've been asked about Brian. Brian is his, Brian basically runs everything now. Yeah, Bob doesn't do anything. Bob pontificates, but Brian runs everything now. I used to call him, I don't know his last name, Brian, because I don't know his last name. They're all young, they're all very professional, they're all extremely intelligent. Everyone Bob associates with. That's one of the reasons he got online, in my opinion, was that he was very unhappy with some things in Washington, especially the paleoconservatives. So, you get fresh blood, and to get fresh blood, well, you know, a lot of guys went online for that reason alone. He could be in charge of his own stuff and get fresh blood. Fresh blood coming in, and guys like, I don't know his last name, Brian. He's now guardian at the gates, Brian, but other than Bob associates with him, therefore he's very professional. That's all I know. But I don't know much more about him. Using him to promote a consistent message is just kind of, although I probably would be able to someday, I can't do that today. But Bob is very easy. It's what you see is what you get. And, the funny thing is, in like 1976, he wrote, and he never really gets credit for that, he ripped on Ronald Reagan in A Plague on Both Your Houses. And Bob wrote that in, I think, like 1976. Now, this is back when most of people listening to this might have been in underoos or not born yet or running around in diapers. But it's an impressive book, and basically he lays both parties out for this attempted genocide against his race. He's provocative because he had an FBI filed at the age of 14 when they started talking about force integrating the South. He thought he was very vocal. He thought it was the first, he thought they were attempting to genocide his race. And all along, most people have thought he was crazy on that subject, that there wasn't going to be genocide. You know, they're not talking about miscegenation when it comes to integration. Well, they were. When it comes to busing, they're not talking about force blending and all that kind of stuff. Well, they were. Now, of course, if you watch the David Duke video, Sarkozy comes out with it. They're not playing games anymore. Well, they weren't playing games from the beginning, and someone like him knows that, and that's where I've respected him. If you read A Plague on Both Your Houses, it's something very respectable. A lot of people didn't understand why he was in the Reagan White House and whatnot, because he ripped on Reagan in A Plague on Both Your Houses. Well, when it comes to White Rabbits, Bob will pretty much tear down anyone. He was in the Reagan administration. He was an appointee in charge of all civilian security clearances and federal staffing. And he did some other government work for different government agencies and whatnot. No big deal. You can find out all about him, but I'm just using him to legitimize a consistent message. And the website that he pontificates on, and all these other guys pontificate on, like Simmons and Brian and, I don't want to leave anyone out, but there's a growing group there, all espouse a particular type of thinking called mantra thought. But he is someone that can write a consistent message. He is someone that has experience in helping in communism. He's very vocal, was very vocal in the struggle against certain, especially against closed societies, in this case communism, for opening that up. Bringing down the Berlin Wall type of thing. He understands this type of thing. He understands how to write it. And anyone he's associated with or anything he's endorsing is going to have to be in that line. But he's just a professional in a particular field of work. And we need professionals in that. You have to have a consistent message. But if you don't have a consistent message, you can't go anywhere. And ours all involve the mantra. And the mantra is a consistent message. It's very unique because it is dynamic. But when I say I'm not idealistic, you just think someone like me is. If you're teaching the basics, it has nothing to do with idealism. It's like these little environmental groups. Someone goes in, I don't want to do this, I want to say this. Well, no, you're not a professional. I mean, if you want to do this from your own perspective, if you want to be a doctor, you want to be a David Duke, and you want to talk about genocide from your own perspective, that's okay. But you got to be a professional to do that. You know, you got to hit the basics. You got to hit the talking points. You can't say, I don't need a consistent message. Or if I have one, I don't need to do one. Oh, no. You have to be on a consistent message night and day. You have, everything starts with that sound. Everything starts with that. You will not see a political campaign. You will not see even when it comes to advertising. On the Truck Roy show, I talk about, I did an interview again for Truck Roy. And, out of the blue, I talk about, the Burger King commercials, have it your way. Now, I haven't had Burger King in month upon months. Not that I have anything against them. But I haven't had that in months. But that popped in my head, or make a run for the border. Now, I haven't been to Taco Bell since I don't know when. But this type of thing, it's not that the masses are asses, and it is, but it's not. We're all asses for the right sound. You can't escape sound. I didn't even need these places recently or in the last I don't know how many months, but yet these things will pop in your head. Sound is like that. And you can't have a good commercial and not play it over and over and over again. People are saying, why are they posting the mantra online and running all these different news groups and everything else? Because it's their job. Posting stuff online anymore is no different than putting out flyers. One of my first jobs when I was little was putting out flyers for, I'm guessing it was some type of landscaping group, if I remember correctly, and they put out these flyers, and they were always changing the colors of their flyers. They, you know, different people thought different colored flyers, like bright orange or bright yellow, would get better sales than basic white, and there's probably some, you know, they got a better response rate. And we'd go out putting out flyers, and then they'd pay for that, you know, they'd pay you so much an hour. Pretty common job for a kid. You know, posting stuff online is the new type of flyers. The difference is it's not, you know, you don't have anyone really calling the cops on you. At least not yet. But that's why they're doing that. But if you have a consistent message, you have to be on it night and day. You have to go over and over at night and day. On my website, I have White Rabbit Genocide. I have the mantra. And this whole entire program has been toward White Rabbit Genocide to expose it. And we don't make immigration arguments per se. We don't make integration assimilation because that's all about genocide. That's where they've been going with this. We're basically making a legal claim. We're accusing them of attempted genocide, one of the largest in history, and it has teeth. Believe me, it has teeth. The lawyers that would be involved all have teeth. I'm not a lawyer. I don't need to be one. You know, every team's got different people in different positions. But the stuff is ruthless stuff. International law is ruthless, and it does apply to white rabbits. It doesn't not apply to white rabbits because black rabbits don't like them or because someone genocided Indians that looked white 500 years ago. No, post 1948, you can't go on the record saying you're going to wipe out white rabbits in any way, shape, manner, or form. You can't attempt to harm them. I've went over these laws. I suggest, you know, Dr. Duke in his video presents the laws on genocide, and they are very complete. The laws on ethnic cleansing are very complete. This stuff is nothing to fool with. Their biggest weakness is on a fact an attempted genocide against Indo-European children, because we're witnessing something unnatural, and I think that's what throws off a lot of the traditional paleoconservatives. You're witnessing a betrayal on the likes. Now, we can talk about the Jews, okay, that's fine. They're the head of the spear. They're obviously out in front of it. But it obviously goes deeper than them, too. At the top of Anglosphere and some parts of Western civilization, you have an attempt to force blend, destroy their own founding gene pools. No time in the history of the world has someone ever done that. No Chinese emperor. He might have killed a lot of Chinese people, but he never tried to replace his people or blend them on, force blend them. It's very weird. It's very unnatural type of stuff. Very weird. And so it calls for something very unique, and that's what our consistent message revolves around. It revolves around the mantra. And I've went over this so much you can listen to it. And I have specific talking points based on that, but that's why it's important. You must be on a consistent message night and day. If you're not, you'll lose to someone who is. I talk about the basics of networking. That all comes off of a consistent message. If you don't network in spite of likes or dislikes, and I use the word indifference, that's probably not the best word to use, but negotiation, that's the way I learned it. That is something that you're not going to, it's something like in my particular case, you know, you're not really going to make me anything multiracial, period, or you're not going to make me a Muslim. You know, you can shoot me, but that's about it. I mean, I'm not going to be a Muslim. That's an indifference. It's something you're never ever going to be able to negotiate around or get around. It's no go. Most Europeans are not going to be Muslims. You can kill them, you know, and that's what they've determined. You can kill them, but most of them aren't going to be multiracial. You can kill them, but they're just not going to be. And indifference, you know, the classic definition in this case is from a negotiation type of class. They give these, you know, if you go into UAW, they're going to give classes on negotiation. Different government agencies give classes on negotiation. Corporate America, corporations all over the world gives negotiation. You can negotiate around likes and dislikes, but you cannot negotiate around indifference. And so we're kind of forming a network around that indifference. We're were indifferent, and indifference is unconcern, listlessness, apathy. Insensibility all imply a lack of feeling. Indifference denotes an absence of feeling or interest. You know, you're not interested in it. It's never going to work for you. And that's really what's happening. It's probably not the best phrase, but that's the one I've learned when it comes to the toughest thing to get around, the best thing to form networks on is an indifference, something that they're just never going to do. But the basics of a consistent message are always there. They're extremely important. You must have one. You must have a professional writing one. And that's why I push Bob's name. I'm not necessarily the hugest, biggest fan of Bob, but he's been right on a lot of issues when it comes to our genocide. He saw it clearly and he saw it early, so he deserves to be congratulated. His method of thinking, the mantra type of thought process that he espouses is always provocative. And definitely the blog and his stuff would be more up the lines of the paleo-conservative or white nationalist type. But this has been done to expand an audience intentionally because I need people on a consistent message, and I don't want to beat the same drum down the same avenue. Why not expand it? If there's a lot of other white rabbits interesting in attacking the system in a nonviolent way, nonviolent being non-illegal, in a way that's not illegal with sound, I don't care really what they are, as long as they're white rabbits. In fact, if you want to say Asia for the Asians, African for the Africans, white countries for everybody, you can be any color you want to and say that. That's good for me. But I'm expanding that audience. And when you do that, and no one's really ever tried to do this, I don't believe in the white nationalist media, you're going to have some detractors because it's not necessarily for them. And you're going to have some people that hate it and others that say, well, you know, it's just a new form of, or some that might be right up your alley. You know, there are some white nationalists that really like this, but there's others that really dislike it. They prefer Bob's stuff. But at the same time, many of them are open enough to get why I'm doing it. But there's been some heated debates over, some people really hate hearing it, on this particular channel or that particular channel. I don't control where it's played. You know, I'm not the one that pushed to get it played on Stormfront. You do have a lot of people surfing Stormfront because it's one of the largest sites in the world. It's a forum with an actual radio program. You have a lot of people surfing that from other sites like Rents.com and Infowars.com. So, and I do talk about topics that they are reading about and listening to. I know I got the data on them, and they're all white by and large. Not all of them, but most of them. Most of the ones I'd be talking to were definitely white. And altermedia.info has done very well with that as well, especially in Germany, of trying to open it up, but yet from a racial perspective. Because all this stuff always comes down to race. If you don't have any healthy ethnic interest, you can't make a claim against the system. In other words, you're going to be fighting some type of ethnic conflict model. You know, you're going to be fighting this person, or you're going to be fighting everything but your enemy, and your enemy in this case is very unusual. It all looks like us and has no loyalty to us, and the tip of the spear is all Hebrew. Yeah, it's all Jewish elites. Doesn't matter what you say about it, they're there. The Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters, well, they're a group then that are going to prove interesting to find out more about. And that's basically that. You have to have a consistent message. You have to have the basics. And there's nothing idealistic about it. It's written as sown. Idealism comes in conventional politics and how you present that and how you go about that and the creativity aspect. That's very idealistic. Conventional politics can be. But practical politics is not idealistic. In other words, if you don't have wheels on the car, you ain't going anywhere. You gotta have a consistent message, and it's gotta be the right one for the right time, written, by the right group. The group over Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar is basically all I had to work with. And if you're good at doing this type of thing, I'd encourage you to go over there and post. You'd be surprised if they endorse it, I'll use it. Whoever they may be. There was a time, when Bob's blog, the Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar, the blog over at WhittakerOnline.org, and there's a link on my website, a very exclusive, what I was led to believe at the time, a very exclusive, but very small reading, you know, a very small number of readers. That has changed dramatically over the past 6 months, especially over the last 90 days. More people are finding out about the blog, and more people are reading it and finding it provocative, especially white nationalists or paleo-conservatives or others that are fascinated by this type of thinking, mantra thought, the type of thinking espoused on there. But at one time, you know, it was, it's always been read. He's always been read by people all over the planet. You know, it's a who's who's list. I've always been told it's a who's who's list. And, you know, Moscow, in Europe, in London, in Washington, it's a who's who's list that read it. It's just not a lot of people. Now it's growing, which is good, which gets more commentators. It gets more fresh blood coming in there. Because we don't want people just reading it. We want them acting on our particular consistent message and looking to participate if that's their cup of tea. But I'm going to be back, and I'm going to talk more about WhitakerOnline.org in the blog. And I'm going to talk about some things. I'm going to approach it a little bit from a different perspective on why that's been so critical. I'll be back with you in a second. WhitakerOnline.org, as well as Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar in general, is kind of growing. It's been growing pretty steadily over the past few years, especially over the last 6 months. There's a lot of interest in White Rabbits from White Rabbits, and a lot of people finding out more about that particular blog and the type of information and the type of thinking that goes on there, thinking that they call mantra thought. But I was asked when and how I found them. I've said before that I knew about Bob Whitaker from busing, because if you're in Midwest, like around Chicago or outside of there, or you're in Boston, you're going to know something about him or remember something about him because he was camped out there. Or, you know, that was his big thing, was busing. He didn't think white rabbits and black rabbits should be experimented on and thrown together. Well, white rabbits aren't black rabbits and vice versa. You know, they busing them 30 miles. 30 miles to go to school is kind of counterproductive, and that was his thing. But one day I got asked a question, which is a pretty tough question. I had said that I knew quite a bit about white rabbits, you know, that I was, you know, racially aware, so on and so forth, which is kind of obvious if you grow up in some areas in America. And so I was asked a question. It was just an honest question. Because I said, or I thought I knew something about white rabbits. I was asked, if a little blue man called from 3 light years away, you know, ET phone home, and said that they're on a planet and they have a gaggle of white rabbits, all underneath the age of 15, that all the others on the planet had died, and they need to know what to do with them. Tell us about white rabbits. And so I was asked to, you know, talk about white rabbits. What would you do for them? How would you do it? And that sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? You know, because if you've been on any type of websites, so on and so forth, all the white nationalist websites, we know a lot about white rabbits. But in reality, at the time, I only thought I knew a lot about white rabbits. What I had dealt with growing up and what we deal with on a day-to-day basis are external challenges. You know, you got the black rabbits, you got the Mexican rabbits, you got the crime, you got the Muslim rabbits, you got the pink rabbits, you got the Jew rabbits. But those are external. You know, if you're dealing with a situation where you got a gaggle, a bunch of little white rabbits, and some little blue alien says, okay, we want to help them out, but we don't know anything about them. Tell me about them. Well, I was stuck. I came up with some things, but I realized right away that I was in a lot of trouble, because most of the problems I've dealt with had nothing to do with that type of thing. They weren't internal. And obviously we are extremely unique. And at the time I didn't realize how unique we were. And so that's when I was told, you know, there wasn't WhitakerOnline.org at the time. That's only been around since 2000, 2001. But prior to that, he's been pontificating a long time. And some of the people around him have been pontificating a long time. But I started reading it. It was in the late 90s or mid-90s or whatever site he was on at the time. And I was asked if it was a struggle. Yeah, it is a struggle. It is a struggle reading about white rabbits. It's a lot easier now because there's more information with groups connected with that site. There's nationalsalvation.net, and it's an ongoing process. But I was asked how long it takes to get a PhD in white rabbit psychology and ecology. I struggled for the longest time because all the problems I dealt with were external, and I assumed that those external problems were the only problems we have, and they are a challenge. Yeah, that's all they are, is a challenge. But our challenge is basically understanding white rabbits. Then one of the challenges with studying white rabbits is you're dealing with a white rabbit that is always doing something different, but is always a white rabbit. We are extremely unique. And at the time, I was came up empty. And in other words, I was not able to come up with anything. It was a blindside question. If you sit down and try it, if a little blue alien came up light years away and said, you know what, we're going to be stuck with them for 20 years until we get them to you, what do we do for them? Tell us about white rabbits. What do we do for them? Well, you got to get rid of the Jew. Well, there are no Jew rabbits. Well, what about the black? Well, there are no black rabbits. Well, there are no, they're nothing. They're just white rabbits. They don't know anything about themselves, and we have limited information. The whole place is burned down. There, none of the records are there. Just, I mean, you're white rabbits. Tell us about you. Well, whoa. We haven't dealt with that type of situation before. What are we? What are we internally? And that was the only place I could ever get that kind of information, and that's how I steered back there, because there's some unknowns about us. And these days, I guess I could sit down and I could write a prescription. I would at least know what questions to ask and be able to help them out somewhat. At the time, I was totally helpless. The ideal is not to have all the answers, it's to know what questions to ask. I was at that point in my life totally used to dealing with external problems, and most of us, that's what we deal with. You know, we go to Ameren, and all these sites are wonderful. We're dealing with external problems, external challenges. And I'm not saying it's all internal, because we are extremely unique. We are spread out over all these fields. And if you take the ethnocentric rabbits and you shut them down or throw them in jail, well, it'd be no difference if you took the one white rabbit physicist we're dependent on and threw them in jail. Well, you end up with a big problem sooner or later. But I think our ethnic interests are so unique that they need to be more known by more people, and we need to have better ways to communicate them across broader groups. Because the vast majority of white rabbits aren't interested in hearing about the traditional type of racial anthropology that some of us are. So how do you communicate that type of stuff when it's critical to know? And our internal struggles are the unique questions we ask, how unique we are. The fact that we're the only rabbits that make radical progress. All these unique things are things, I think, things that need to be known by a larger group and can be communicated in different ways. And this show is kind of an experiment in that, by using rabbits instead of the traditional what you may think of as racial language or white nationalist type of language or that type of thing. But the blog has played a serious role in educating on that particular subject. You know, everyone got their specific role to play. You want to know about Jew rabbits? You can go to JewWatch.com and then look up Kevin McDonald, and you will learn all about them. At least, definitely learn about what they've done in the past few hundred years and whatnot, which is probably more sophisticated, significant, because we don't live, you know, we're not living 2,000 years ago. We're not back in Rome or anything else, but traits stay the same. So all those type of websites are significant. But what I kept coming back to is this particular mode of thinking. I was attracted to that particular mode of thinking and learning more about us internally. And that's where it started. But it was a struggle at first, because you're dealing with a totally different type of thinking and a totally different, a little bit of a paradigm shift. Instead of dealing with external, we're dealing with internal, why things happen. And I've come to believe it's every bit as important, because that's always going to be there. We can get rid of all, you know, in the question I was asked, there were no external challenges at all. I was dealing with all internally what they were, and I wasn't used to those type of questions. But it is no less legitimate. And that's the significance of it. It's the only one on, you know, you could say that Ameren is one of the most foremost sites of reporting white rabbits getting wiped out. Well, they've done. I remember when the Ameren American Renaissance, or Ameren.com, first came out, you could see, oh, okay, this is not just my area, it's a whole entire planet. You know, it's all the white rabbit holes everywhere. But all these sites have played their role. But that is what is significant about the project that old Bob Whitaker started way back when, is knowing about us and our natural style of thinking and what works best for us and what we are internally. And these days I could sit down and write those little white rabbits a prescription. I would at least know what questions to ask. At the time I was pretty much helpless. But I've been asked how long it took it takes a little bit, like anything else. The good news is that there's a lot of information there if that's what you're interested in. But I believe the stuff is so critical on what we are internally that it is not only necessary for a broader group, for to be able to communicate that across broader channels, but that more would be interested in this type of thing if it was communicated in a way directly toward them and giving them other things. I was asked questions from some of these conspiracy rabbits that are starting to listen to me. I don't know if somewhere on one of these, you know, they got all kinds of, white rabbits have forums for every particular type of thing. You will find a forum for fishing gear. You will find a white rabbit forum for auto mechanics. You will find white rabbit forums for all kinds of conspiracy stuff. But one of them ended up, some of them have found me, and since I go down that angle from a specific racial perspective, they're asking some pretty interesting questions because I put out some buzzwords on those areas, and I will go into that in the next one because I don't shy away from that stuff. At least if it can come back to race or if it involves white rabbits, sure. I will be answering questions from them, but that's all part of the process. But WhitakerOnline.org played a critical role in that. That's just the only place that type of food was coming from. Those type of carrots were coming from. Because white rabbits will sit in the room, I know I will, and they will watch the brown rabbits, they will watch the pink rabbits stacking up the brown rabbits, the yellow rabbits, all in our room. And, you know, if the first white rabbit, they shut him down and he can't get him out of there because that's his job or her job, well, then all the rest will sit there and watch him to the extent that they're in a consensus trance. They're writing about pink rabbits, they're writing about brown rabbits, but what they do at Bob's Underground Graduate Seminars, they'll sit back and say, okay, now why are we watching them? You know, that's the question they will ask, that type of thing. You know, they're lighting a candle, but why is this wick here, that type of thing. And that's the significance. But I'll be back with you with a question and answer for the, not necessarily for your average white national or white racialist. This is from white rabbits that are the conspiracy rabbits that have found whiterabbitradio.net. If they want to be vocal and you want to attack the system in a most revolutionary way with just a simple law-abiding sound, it doesn't matter to me. I play a simple game. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. So that is a big audience that has become, maybe you've seen them with their blowhorns out there attacking the New World Order or whatever. Well, I can tell them all about it. And they've asked some provocative questions, and I will answer them as best I know how, or at least put them on the path of someone that can legitimately give them healthy information without trying to hurt them, without an axe to grind, that type of thing. But I'll be back with you on 33, and that's going to be interesting. But this is another episode of Follow the White Rabbit.
This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.